From NPR News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill have unveiled details of the spending cuts that will be made to yield the $38 billion in savings that are central to the agreement that kept the federal government from shutting down last week. The budget of the Environmental Protection Agency will be cut 16%, and funding for the National Institutes of Health will be reduced by $260 million, both cuts smaller than what Republicans had proposed. The White House managed to head off cuts to Head Start and elimination of the AmeriCorps Public Service Program. The vote in the House tomorrow on the spending plan is expected to be close despite support from leaders of both parties. GOP Congresswoman and Tea Party favorite Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota says she'll vote against the measure and she will oppose raising the nation's debt ceiling.
Every dollar we spend, 41 cents of every dollar is borrowed money. How long could you live like that? My husband and I couldn't live more than a month like that.
The nation reaches its debt limit next month, and the Treasury Department is warning that unless the ceiling is raised, the government will have to default on federal debt for the first time ever, a move that many economists say could drive up borrowing costs and trigger another financial crisis. Authorities in Japan have raised the crisis level at the crippled nuclear power facility there to the highest point on the international scale of nuclear accidents. NPR's Greg Dixon in Tokyo says the new level is comparable to the one assigned to the Chernobyl disaster in 1986.
It is now considered a level 7, the highest rating on an international scale. The move was based on a better understanding of the radiation released in the early days of the crisis, not on any recent changes at the plant. And while this puts the current crisis in the same category as the accident at Chernobyl, far less radiation has been released in Japan, and the health effects are expected to be much less severe.
That's NPR's Greg Dixon in Tokyo. Egypt's former president, Hosni Mubarak, is slated to appear in a court in Cairo. NPR's Deborah Amos reports the ousted leader is facing charges of embezzling public funds, allegations he strongly denies.
Special security has been arranged so Egypt's former president can answer questions in a Cairo courthouse, according to the Interior Minister. Under house arrest for weeks, official comments have suggested the 82-year-old former leader might be too ill to come to Cairo. But this weekend, Mubarak seems strong enough to defend his record in a recorded statement broadcast on satellite television. His remarks were widely criticized in the Egyptian media. Deborah Amos, NPR News, Cairo.
The former president of Ivory Coast, Laurent Gbagbo, remains defiant even after his capture by troops loyal to his rival Alassane Ouattara, who's internationally recognized as the country's newly elected leader. Gbagbo is refusing to sign a statement giving up power to Ouattara. A United Nations panel has been appointed to look into allegations of serious human rights abuses in Ivory Coast. This is NPR News from Washington. Commerce Secretary Gary Locke is announcing more federal help for small businesses along the Gulf Coast. Eileen Fleming of member station WWNO reports the assistance is aimed at helping businesses benefit from an array of federal, state, and local assistance that's now available.
Secretary Locke says the program called Commerce Connect is expanding to help businesses getting started or looking to grow. He says it's one way to help small companies that are still struggling to recover from the BP oil spill last April.
We really felt that we needed to help those small business owners who are so preoccupied with just trying to keep the doors open and lining up business.
The Commerce Department is also working to connect American companies with overseas customers. The Obama administration is aiming to double exports by 2015. For NPR News, I'm Eileen Fleming in New Orleans.
Today marks the 150th anniversary of the start of the Civil War. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports there'll be a special ceremony at Fort Sumter in Charleston, South Carolina.
The first shots of the Civil War were fired at Fort Sumter on April 12, 1861. Confederate forces fired on the Union fort from Charleston Harbor, prompting a surrender 2 days later. The island stronghold is now a national monument. Confederate and Union reenactors are conducting a day-long recreation of the cannon bombardment that launched the Civil War. Even though more than 3,000 shells were fired at Fort Sumter, no soldier on either side was killed in the fighting. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.
Investigators looking into an accident at JFK Airport in New York last night. The wing of one plane clipped the tail of another as they were taxiing. No one was injured. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.